1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show.
This is the Phil Hendry Show. Our number is 1-800-449-8686. We are in New York, as we have been all week. And tonight, as I have said, we are not going to do shtick necessarily. But and that's as it should be. We're not going to do the usual Phil Hendry Show comedy show per se. But what I do want to lead the program with is a small show note. My engineer, Craig Taylor, purchased a Swiss Navy knife from a guy on the street today. And Phil Hendry, being the ever-trusting soul, said to, I said this to Craig with full consciousness and full, just with the wide eyes of a child. I said, I didn't know Switzerland had a navy. And I realized, of course, they don't. They're a landlocked country. So Craig Taylor, the last name is T-A-Y-L-O-R, has a Swiss Navy knife. Good evening, everybody from New York. You are hearing in the background a live feed. We have a microphone placed in what the press has been calling the hole. We know it as Ground Zero. That reference, the hole, is simply press shorthand for various, for this particular site, and the press is known to do those kinds of things, just do shorthand. It isn't meant disrespectfully at all. It's simply meant as press shorthand for this area that we have concentrated and focused so much on over the last year, and certainly this week. And there's been an awful lot, and I think rightfully so, an awful lot of comment today from Washington, from people who felt that they were left out a little bit of the awareness of what happened on 9/11. And I just want to address that for a moment. What happened at the Pentagon deserves our attention, and the attacks in Washington deserve all of our feeling of care and empathy for our fellow citizens. But you know, it's interesting. They're military people. The Pentagon is a military center, and when we look at soldiers and when we look at military people, they're also rigid, and they seem like they're taking care of themselves. You know, they seem like, to me, when I look at a soldier, when I look at a member of the military, when I look at those great people that we have in uniform, I always think, boy, what can I possibly offer those guys that they aren't already doing for themselves? You know, they're tougher than I am. They're smarter than I am. They've got a better world view probably than I do. They know what they're up against better than I do. And so I suppose I'm guilty, along with so many of us, of feeling, well, you know, those guys are taking care of themselves. So let's concentrate, I guess, on that area that is a bit more familiar to us, and that would be the area where there were so many civilian deaths, and that, of course, is the World Trade Center. But having said that, never should what happened in Washington be far from our minds as we think about what also happened here a year ago in New York City. My name is Phil Hendry. As I said, I ordinarily do what some people would call a comedy show, others may not, but we generally do satire. Tonight on our program, we're going to do something else that we think we do well. We're going to give you a view of our country and a view of events as they unfold, profoundly moving and ever-changing events as they have unfolded over the past year and as they continue to do today. And I want to tell you a story. And here's how it started. It's the story of this morning. I'm in New York City. We are here. We brought our show here. And we have a hotel off of Times Square. And the reason why we moved over to Times Square, originally we were on Park Avenue, is because my kids, a couple of them who are with me, love Times Square. And if you go to Times Square, it is literally, it's family friendly. I never thought that anybody would really ever be heard saying words like Times Square is family friendly, but it really is. And we moved over there because the kids just love the lights. They love all of the restaurants. They love all of the action. This morning I'm lying in bed. It's about 5:30 Eastern time. And I'm in a twilight sleep, and I hear what I think is the air conditioner. And gradually, the sound that I think is the air conditioner is taking on a melody. And gradually, through the twilight of my sleep, I am hearing, I'm thinking to myself, my God, those are bagpipes. I'm hearing bagpipes. No, it can't be bagpipes. And so I drift a little bit back into sleep, and I can't get away from the thought, those are bagpipes. So I got out of bed, and I raised the blackout blinds, and we have this marvelous view uptown, up Broadway, And there before my eyes, moving down the street at 5:30 in the morning, even in a city like New York, at 5:30 in the morning, the streets are relatively deserted. There is not a lot of traffic. But as I gazed through the window up Broadway this morning, I saw the flashing amber lights of the fire trucks. I saw the rotating red cherries of the police radio cars. I saw the flashing red on the fire trucks. And I saw suddenly through those lights the white-shirted bagpipe players as they, probably about 50 strong, were marching slowly down Broadway, playing these bagpipes, alternating between Amazing Grace and the Marine Corps hymn, and it made the hair on my arm stand up a little bit. Now, I have to tell you that my heritage is Scottish. My grandfather, my adopted grandfather, was born and raised in Glasgow, Scotland, and moved to Canada. So I suppose the sound of bagpipes have a particular meaning for me, but I can't imagine anybody hearing bagpipes and not getting a little bit of a chill along with the drums and that slow, steady beat of the drums and the droning, beautiful melody of the bagpipes. And as the bagpipers came down Broadway, gradually pedestrians joined. There were 20, maybe 30, and as they moved down through Times Square, the crowd grew larger. And I went over to the bed and I shook my wife awake because I know she would have killed me had I not. And I said, Maria,
what?
Maria, they're bagpipes on Broadway.
What?
Just get up, come on, and you never saw two people get dressed faster. She grabs her camera, we both throw on our shoes without socks, I throw on a sweatshirt. I would have gone down there without my pants had I suddenly remembered, yes, I've got to cover up with this big ass of mine, so let me get some pants on. We got into the elevator, we scurried down, we ran out, just as the bagpipers were passing by the Marriott on Times Square, we ran down the street like children after a parade, watching an ever-swelling group of pedestrians following the bagpipers with that steady beat of the drums, the steady, beautiful melody of the bagpipes. They came all the way down from the Bronx. The original bagpipe corps was from the Bronx, and as they moved their way down Broadway, other groups from other precincts and other boroughs, and these are the New York Police Department, a New York Police Department bagpipe corps, if you will, and as they gradually joined, the bagpipers grew ever larger in numbers, and the pedestrians grew ever larger in numbers. Maria running ahead of them, taking pictures, and then running ahead some more and taking pictures. I finally said, I think we got enough pictures. I really think we have enough pictures. And then we just walked. We walked alongside of them. We walked alongside of them for what it seemed like blocks, listening to the music, listening to the drums, watching the people joining. People in silence, not a word. People occasionally flashing a picture, and occasionally people moving up from where the pedestrians were gathered behind the bagpipers and moving up and joining ranks with them and walking alongside of them just so they can be with them, just so they could somehow be a part of their numbers. And the bagpipers and the drummers, and then we saw the uniforms of fire departments, the uniforms of the Glendale, California Fire Department. We saw uniforms from New Jersey fire departments, Colorado fire departments. We saw fire department of New York guys in their overalls and in their boots, carrying their axes. Some of them looked like they might have just come off a fire line. Some of them in their full dress uniforms. Some of them wearing simply T-shirts that said FDNY. Some of them with T-shirts that said New York City Police. Gradually, the crowd getting bigger and bigger. And the members of the associated fire departments from across the country joining in this parade, this silent march down Broadway, that was almost a healing of the initial march that was up Broadway on 9/11/2001, when not a subway train was running, not a cab was running, not a bus was running, and suddenly all of the people who were working on Manhattan that day found themselves walking home uptown in the middle of the street, a river of humanity walking away from the horror of the World Trade Center. And this morning, they came back down Broadway. They came back down with the bagpipe corps, the drum corps, and as I remember it now, I, you know, we were making jokes today about, I think Aaron Brown on CNN shed a tear, and I think some of the other guys, I could start bawling right now. I can't believe it, because you really have got to go some to make Phil Hendry cry. Nothing makes me cry, absolutely nothing, other than the end to Titanic, Backstreet with Vivian Leigh, Gone with the Wind, some parts of The Graduate, some parts of Midnight Cowboy. Other than that, I never bawl about anything, but I can feel the hair on my arms. Old Yeller, too, that made me cry, but I can feel the hair on my arms stand up as this magnificent, stirring procession made its way downtown this morning. And we followed for blocks, and I finally said, we better get back and get back to sleep because we've got to work tonight. We went back to the hotel room, and it was at that point we realized neither one of us could sleep. And then I will tell you what we did after that, and it doesn't have anything to do with removing our clothes. It has to do with continuing this procession, our personal procession and our personal journey today, as we join with New Yorkers and hopefully with a lot of Americans today, feeling this day, man, because if you've been listening to me for any length of time, you know I'm not putting you on. You know this is Phil Henry talking to you. This is a meaningful thing for me. I hope it's meaningful for a lot of people. And you may ask, why would you say that, Phil? Of course it is, because not all of you have been to New York, and you have to see this to believe it. In all of its beauty, all of its horror, but you've got to see it to believe it. We are in New York City. Some of you are hearing me on tape delay. Some of you, fortunately, are hearing me live. And we are going to approximate as best as we can. At 9:11 this evening, local time, we are going to observe a moment of silence. Major League Baseball is going to, all of the teams across Major League Baseball tonight will stop play at 9:11 tonight to observe a moment of silence. We're going to do the same thing on our program. We will try to approximate that for our live stations as well as our stations that are carrying us delayed tonight. This is the Phil Henry Show. The background ambience you're hearing, you can hear the wind. It's been extremely windy today in New York. In fact, Craig and I, when we came down the Vesey Street from the from our studios in Wall Street, we were almost blown off the sidewalk. It was quite powerful, about a 30 to 40 mile hour gust we were feeling here downtown. We'll be right back. Our number is 1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
New York City is where we are. We are just about, I don't know, probably 300, 400 yards away from what the press has been calling the hole. We know it as Ground Zero, and we're looking at the area of Ground Zero. It's completely lit. The president has left. We have a view of the ramp, the long ramp that maybe a lot of you have been seeing on television today, and we did see the president come up the ramp and get into his vehicle. I guess he's on his way over to Ellis Island, and from there I'm sure he will give some series of comments, and I don't doubt that perhaps during his comments we may be preempted by some stations to hear those. Those of you that stay with us, that is absolutely cool too. Let me go back to this morning, and our number is 1-800-449-8686, by the way. This morning, after seeing the bagpipers, we get back up to the room, and I said, well, we got to get back to sleep because we have to work tonight. And we both look at each other, Marie and I, you know what, I can't sleep. I said, I can't sleep either. Boom, let's go down to Ground Zero. Let's go there. Let's be a part. Let's see. Let's join. Let's whatever we... I mean, it's very human, and I'm sure if you were here, you guys would feel the same way. It's just a very natural instinct when something so moving, so important, so emotional, and so historic is going on. You have got to simply be a part of it. So we said, forget it, let's go. So we took a couple of quick showers. We got up to where the press shuttle was. The press shuttle took us downtown to as close to Ground Zero as it could get. We ran into another member of the media, and we walked for probably about three blocks over from where the shuttle dropped us off, which was somewhere around Wall Street, and we walked over here to Vesey and came across to the hotel where we are now. But we stood on the street, and we were really not hoping to do anything more than just to be there. I didn't, you know, there's the instinct to want to run up to the fence of Ground Zero and look through the grating and see what's going on. But really where we were was almost as important, if not more so, because we were standing right at the corner of the FDR Parkway, and where Ground Zero is. And we were standing behind a barricade, and gradually coming down the drive from the hotel here toward Ground Zero, getting themselves organized to go into the hole and to begin putting down flowers and putting down pictures and begin to just be in that very place where their loved ones were murdered a year ago, were the family members. We suddenly saw them 20 at a time, 30 at a time, 5 at a time, coming down and collecting themselves right here at the entrance to the hotel across the street from Ground Zero. They were wearing green armbands. They were young people. They were old people. They were middle-aged people. They also had the ribbons, the very familiar ribbon that we're all aware of, the one that crosses at the bottom that is red, white, and blue, all of those ribbons signifying that they were family members, as well as little green armbands. The New York City police trying to be as compassionate as they could possibly be, but at the same time trying to organize everybody. Please show us your green armband so we know that you belong down there. We know that we can get you into Ground Zero. They were white. They were black. They were Muslim. They were Christian. I saw at least 5 or 6 people in traditional Muslim dress. Every kind of human being, every kind of American lost someone in the World Trade Center a year ago. They were crying. At one point, I saw an elderly woman who was holding to her chest the picture of a loved one, her head bent down. She was crying. She was inconsolable. When the NYPD said, "Can we see your green armband?" she didn't even hear it, so her daughter reached over and grabbed her arm and held it up and said, "She's got one." We saw a young woman who seemed absolutely befuddled and confused. She didn't even look like she knew where she was. She was wearing sunglasses. She had on a black pantsuit. She had her green armband and her ribbon. She was standing next to a man, I would assume, as a father or perhaps a husband, and alternately looking angry and sad and confused, and as if she wasn't quite sure where it was that she was. She was, and imagine this. You're going to memorialize somebody that you love, someone that you lost, someone that you haven't seen in a year, someone who you couldn't even hold a funeral for. And as you walk down this drive, on either side of you are people with cameras and notebooks, people with American flags, none of us being disrespectful, all of us trying to observe our distance and at the same time trying to look into the eyes and the faces of these people and show them that we care, but they're looking back at hundreds of cameras and hundreds of people and hundreds of lights, and all of us with, I had on a New York Yankee cap with a flag shoved in the top because it was getting a little difficult for me to hold the flag and hold my backpack and everything else, and Maria had her camera, so I just shoved the flag in my hat, and the next thing I know, I see about 15 guys start shoving flags in their hats, and frankly, a flag in your hat means the wind gets to it. It can wave it around. It looks kind of cool, but we saw every kind of person. We saw the New Jersey State Police then came down. You talk about a bunch of guys that are spit and polish. You have never seen a bunch of more ripped, tough-looking guys than the New Jersey State Police. The New York City Police are interesting guys. They look very casual. They're always on the job, and they are always very aware and very cognizant of what's going on, and there's not a moment that goes by that the NYPD isn't on the job. But they always look a little more laid back as they look at the scene and watch to see what's going on. And at one point, one of the officers, who looked like he was just laid back and sort of watching the parade, his eye caught a couple of people trying to get through the barricade to my left. And the next thing I hear is, hey, that barricade's there for a reason, sir. That's there for a reason, huh? That's there for a reason, yes, sir. That's there. Unfortunately, you got to go around the back and over the side. It's there for a reason. And that's the New York City Police. You know, they look like they're kind of kicking and they're sort of relaxed with their arms, but those guys are on top of the job big time, morning, noon, and night. And as Craig and I were coming up to the hotel, in fact, the wind was blowing so hard, there were 3 officers standing at the corner, and one of them lost his sunglasses to the wind as they blew out into the street, and I heard somebody say, "Hey, look, Dennis lost his sunglasses! Dennis lost his sunglasses!" Even in the middle of this, even in the middle of what we're going through today, there are people bonding on all levels, humorously and with great empathy and love. This is the Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-
1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
New York City is where we are. This is 9/11/02, and we're here because of 9/11/01. We're here broadcasting to you because, as an American, as an entertainer, as a performer, I had to come to New York City to be a part of this because I don't believe that I could effectively carry on whatever it is I do on my show. Hopefully it's funny and it's fun. I don't think I could do it with any great honesty unless I got some perspective on what has transpired over the last year in this country. And I'm just speaking personally now. If you're new to my radio program, I do a comedy show, but tonight we're going to try to be as real as we can in terms of just our feeling and emotion about this country and what we've been through, and this particular day, a day of remembrance, a day where we saw, where I personally saw, and I wasn't more than 3 or 4 feet from, literally thousands of family members. In fact, Craig and I met a family member in the lobby of the Embassy Suite Hotel here this evening. The man had a ribbon on, and he was reading a newspaper. There was a little boy sitting next to him, and I didn't want to intrude. I simply said, "Sir, do you mind me asking where you got that ribbon?" He said, "Well, it's something they give to the family members." And I said, I'm sorry, are you a family member?" He said, "Yes, I lost my brother-in-law." And I said, I'm sorry to hear that." And he said, "That's all right. You know, we're here and we're taking a break, and I got my son something to eat." And he said, "Where are you guys from?" We said, "We're with the press. We're radio." And he said, "Boy, you guys have got a lot of competition," because he said, "When I was standing down at Ground Zero down there in the hole, and I looked up, all I could see were cameras and people and microphones just surrounding the place." He said it was very nice, and obviously, many of the police officers that we saw today, they had a contingent from the London Metropolitan Police. We saw the big, tall, the classic tall bobby hats going through the crowd. There were about 20 London Metro cops. There were New Jersey cops. There were a crime prevention crew from the NYPD. There were New Jersey City Police. There was a county sheriff. There was the Florida State Patrol. I think we saw some Chicago police as well. All of them forming a cordon around the families as they went down and paid their respects and laid wreaths and put pictures there in what is being termed the circle of honor or the ring of honor, and I don't know which one it is. That will become part of a permanent memorial where the families put those flowers. Our number is 1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show. I'm going to continue with my observations here from New York, and I'm going to also tonight, I want you to know this is not all going to be hearts and flowers, because as I said at the beginning of the program, this has affected me personally. I can't speak for anybody. I'm not here pandering to anybody. I'm not here to give the American view. I'm here to give Phil Hendry's view. This affected me in a way that has been very profound, and I'm sure there's a lot of reasons for that. The fact that I'm the son of a father that fought in World War II, the fact that I, perhaps my whole life, I've been looking for some kind of real deep belief in my homeland. Perhaps I've been looking for a cause. I'm being honest with you as I look over my own feelings about why I feel so strongly about what happened and about what we should do about it. So I can only speak for myself. I can't speak for you. I don't know what you think. I don't even know if you agree with me. I don't even know if you can feel one hundred millionth of what anybody in New York City feels. I have to tell you, the feeling in New York City from some of the people that I've talked to is that only New Yorkers really get it. Only New Yorkers are really getting this. Only New Yorkers really, really understand what happened. Only New Yorkers really face down the horror and are really, really understand the tragedy. And that the rest of America, it's just a television show. And to the rest of America, it's just another sad event being carried live in between commercials. And I'm here to tell you, if that's how you feel, then you have no understanding of what it is to be, and I'm not saying this in the flag-waving Republican Party, Democrat Party sense. I'm not saying it in that sense at all. I'm saying it in the sense of every novelist that ever wrote a book about the great landscape of America, from Walt Whitman to Herman Melville to the great Dorothy Parker, to all of the artists, because I identify with them and their view of this country. I'm saying it in the sense of working people. I'm saying it in the sense of a country that is so broad and generous and free that we don't even think about being citizens of a country. We think it's a hassle to think about being citizens of a country. We think it's an infringement. We think it's lame. We think it's unhip. It's uncool. It's just so unchic to be a flag waver, because who's got time for that? I only got time for my own life. And man, I'm going to tell you, that was Phil Hendry. In many eras of my life, that was me. Until 9/11. And I read today in the paper, it didn't change the world. It didn't change America. It changed us individually. And what it changed about me is it made me aware, even though I've got dreams, hopes, aspirations, I got career goals, I got goals for my family, I got things I want to do, I want to break 80 in golf, I want to whatever else, I want to plan my 51st birthday party, you know, I want to see what other good videotapes are out there. I'm also an American. And if this event, and I call it an event, if this gothic horror that was visited on this country, 9/11/2001, if all it is to you is a television show that sort of intrudes upon what has been up to this point a fairly consistent procession of life for you, then you have no idea what it is to be an American in the truest, most artistic, and most spiritual sense of that. And when I say spiritual sense, I'm talking about I Hear America Singing. I'm talking about the great Walt Whitman. I'm talking about the first country in the history of the world, to be a spiritual entity. Not just a flag, and not just the Smithsonian, and not just a whole bunch of uncool laws, and in the words of Norman Mailer, a failing enterprise, or in the words of Johnny Carson, of all people, overdoing it with patriotism, but a real... Now, there's the music. I did not cue that music, okay? I don't know what this music... It's coming from Battery Park. You can hear that music, and I'm doing this rap, and I don't want anybody to think that, you know, cue the music now. No, we're actually getting feeds from a variety of places around New York, and right now we're getting a feed from Battery Park, and it parks throughout New York. What's that, Craig? Yeah, they've lit the eternal flame at Battery Park, which Battery Park is across the street from Ground Zero. It is a place where a lot of people ran to for safety at 9/11, because Battery Park, it literally borders the bay, the confluence of the Hudson and East River, and it was a place where people went to try to, first of all, get a breath of oxygen, and some people were jumping into the bay on 9/11. Some were just jumping into the bay and swimming for Brooklyn. I'm going to put this down because I don't want, by the way, everything you're hearing is live. This is not anything that we are cueing. This is not anything we're doing at our studio. The music you're hearing right now is coming from Battery Park. They have lit the eternal flame in Battery Park, much like the eternal flame that stands over the grave of John Kennedy. That is a flame, literally, that will never, ever go out. It will. There will be someone, a group of people in charge of keeping that flame lit, and it will stay lit for as long as time permits, I guess, is the best way to see it. So there is music everywhere. Battery Park, Central Park, Prospect Park, Union Square, Times Square tonight, I'm sure, has music. And this is a culmination of the day. But getting back to my thought, and then we'll take a break. And hopefully we'll take some phone calls from you guys, because I am not a traditional talk show host, so I'm not going to set up a question for you. I'm not going to sit here and tell you what to call in about. If you've got a feeling that moves you to the telephone tonight, you go right ahead and you call me, but I'm not going to set up any questions. I'm just going to tell you how I feel. And that is, if you think that what happened today and what happened a year ago is a TV show that has interrupted your life, or is a bad thing or a sad thing, but you don't quite really get all of the emotion around it, and if you think it's a bad thing, but you don't think that we should be overdoing it, in the famous words of the late great Johnny Carson, then you're not an American. You are not really, in the real sense, an American. The new man and the new woman on the face of this earth. And I mean that. As dramatic as that sounds, I mean every word of that. This is the Phil Henry Show. We are live from New York City tonight, and we will be live tomorrow night, Thursday, and Friday night as well. We have spent the entire week here in New York, and we will continue with our coverage here of 9/11/02. Our number is 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. Live from New York City, it's the Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show is back.
Phil Henry Show live in New York City. We're a few feet from ground zero, and we're here this evening, and we're here through the duration of the week as we cover as best we can tonight events around ground zero. We have a live feed from the area surrounding ground zero. We also have a feed, intermittent feed from a lot of the parks around town where they're having music tonight. Battery Park was, we just heard that rousing rendition there from Battery Park, and there's a few other places. And we're giving you some observations on the things that we saw today, and we're certainly going to get into the politics. I'm not going to get into the politics. That's a bad word. I'm going to get into what I think of the causes. I'm going to get into some comments about what I see as the enemy. We're not going to soft-pedal anything tonight. We are going to be respectful of these events as we comment on them from New York. 1-800-449-8686. Here is Bob. You're on the Phil Henry Show. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, sir. You're on the air.
Yeah, Phil, my name is Bob, and I didn't know your show until about a month or two ago. And I fully respect everything that you said this evening as I was driving and listening. And, you know, your sentiments and my sentiments and millions of Americans. My question is this an epiphany for you? But as I've listened over the last couple of weeks on my way driving around, it's caused, I think your parodies and your comedies have caused a lot of grief for a lot of people. I think I recall a mother calling in to respond to one of your parodies who lost a daughter in the towers. And
mm-hmm.
and that's kind of hard to understand.
Of course, we have no way of knowing if she really did.
Okay, but nonetheless,
but
I think
putting
there
that
been
aside,
enough...
Putting that aside... Hold on for a minute, Bob. You've said that my material has caused grief for people, so I'm going to respond to that.
Okay.
I do a satire of American attitude.
Right.
The satires that we do have to do with people's tendency to commercialize 9/11, have to do with people's tendency to be selfish about 9/11 and the protection of their own families as opposed to a protection of the country. Have to do with people not taking the event seriously because they don't think America could be attacked. What my show is about, and since you've only been a listener for a month, I need for you to understand, what we do on our show is we send up American attitude and the human experience, and that is not a cop-out. I really know what satire is. I really execute it on my show. I don't hide behind it like a lot of guys in this business. Now, the lady that called and said that she had lost a daughter in the World Trade Center was talking to one of the character voices that I do.
Right.
All right?
But
and
she was talking. But she was a real person.
She was a real person talking to an example of an ignorant person.
I understand that. But I guess what I'm saying is it just exacerbates the situation. It causes pain.
It doesn't illuminate certain stupidities. It doesn't give us an idea of the people we must avoid or re-educate. It doesn't give us an idea of the reality of some people's attitudes and how we need to fight them.
I guess my only response, Mr. Henry, would be that I believe that the people who are the your folks who are positioning things in regard to 9/11. Clearly did not represent the feelings of most Americans.
I don't know that that's true. I don't know that that's true. I don't know that that's true. Come to New York City, Bob, and talk to New Yorkers. They think, in many ways, they're completely alone.
Yeah, Mr.
They think that in many. All right. Have you been here? All right. Have you talked to New Yorkers since 9/11?
Yeah.
All right. I have too, and many of them say to me that you have to be here to really get it.
Oh, and I think that's true, to really feel the impact, but it doesn't mean that the rest of us don't have that same heartfelt.
Well, we'll find that out. I'll find out tonight whether or not the rest of us really do feel it or whether we're just paying lip service. I don't know. 1-800-449, I appreciate your call, Bob, and thank you for your question about my show. I don't want to discourage people from calling me about the show. I don't want to make it about me, because I'd like to make it about something bigger than that. But hey, you know what? It all's fair. I mean, if I've done or said anything that you want to ask a question about, that's fine. 1-800-449-8686. This is James on the Phil Henry Show. James, go ahead.
Hey, Phil. I'm going to try and make sense here and not get choked up. I have, not in the traditional sense of the word forgotten, but let's say I got numb. And at first I was wondering why you were going to New York, and now, and listening to you now, I think you're in the perfect spot, because we need to remember what it is to be Americans. I've never been there, but I will go someday. But I think from what I'm hearing from you and from a lot of other people that have been there and experiencing that, is it could be a golden chance for a lot of people to rediscover what it is to be an American, instead of just the ho-hum, day in, day out, pay lip service to the red, white, and blue.
I like that. Yeah, I agree.
I just, what the fellow, I think, I'm glad you defended yourself in the way you did, because when I first listened to you, and I'm a fairly new listener myself, I didn't start listening till about March, and I was pretty outraged the first two or three shows. But after I got it, I said, this is such a unique take on how to present to people the true stupidities. Whether or not you're an American, you know, the human condition is that there is an unbelievable depth of stupidity that people want to plumb.
I don't know whether it's stupidity, or I don't know whether it is it's a fear to face reality, but we do on our program, with the characters that we bring forth, we try to look at the underbelly of feelings. We try to get real feelings out there and not the usual talk radio feelings. And look, there are people who are afraid and don't have any sense of country. They're just afraid. There are people who do want to commercialize it, and maybe they don't even know they're commercializing it. There are people who pretend like they're real Americans, but in point of fact, don't like this country and don't like the intrusion of these events. There are people that are recently arrived to this country and don't get all of our angst about this and have really got to get their feet wet. There's all kinds of sensibility out there that we, on the Phil Henry Show, through our satire, try to hold up to a mirror, okay? And I'll talk more about that. Thank you very much for your call, James. Our number is 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Henry Show live in New York City.
(1-800-449-8686). This is the Phil Henry Show.
Yeah. We on? Okay. Thank you. Los Angeles. Hi, everybody. Phil Henry, 1-800-449-8686. And we are live in New York City. You will hear a background, what we call ambient sound. This is sound that is literally being brought to us into our studio here from Ground Zero. We have a microphone at Ground Zero. We also have some ambient sound outside of the studios here near FDR Parkway. And so whatever's going on there right now in what the press has dubbed the hole, you're going to hear. And I'm sure what we're hearing right now are workmen disassembling scaffolding. We saw a few rental trucks rolling in there, probably taking materials. out of there. Now it's time, and we'll get to your phone calls. We've got a lot of people responding now to comments that we've made the first hour, and that's great. I want to talk to you guys, but now it's time for a little bit of a trip into the Twilight Zone. And here it is. Craig Taylor today came over here to the Embassy Suites Hotel to take a look at our broadcast site. He was with a young media liaison who's working with the broadcast company that helps us send our transmission to you. They wanted to go from the 9th floor, Craig. They wanted to go from the 10th floor to the 11th floor. And they did. They went from floor 10 to floor 11 in the stairwell, not in the elevator, but in the stairwell. Having gone to the 11th floor then, they decided to go down to the 9th floor. Naturally, if you're traversing the 9th, the 11th floor to the 9th floor, you're passing the 10th floor. Well, guess what? They went from the 11th floor and suddenly found themselves at the 9th floor door. They never passed the 10th floor door. Now, I'm not Art Bell. I'm not Cleo. I'm just a reporter. They went from the 11th floor to the 9th floor. They never passed the 10th floor. What's the date today? 9/11. Again, Craig Taylor is known to me to be a solid, sober citizen. He has put down the use of X and is, I'm kidding about that if any of his friends and relatives are listening, but seriously, this is exactly what happened today, as told to me. He also has the media person to back him up because she was with him when they went from floor 11 to floor 9 on the stairwell. They went, excuse me, they went from a door marked floor 11 to a door marked floor 9, never having passed the 10th floor. 9/11, 9/11. And that is a true story. 1-800-449-8686. Here is Nicole on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello, Nicole.
Hi, Phil.
Hi, how are you?
I'm pretty good, thanks. I really just, I'm rather recently introduced to you, been introduced to your work, and I just wanted to say you do a fabulous job. I think the way you're handling tonight is right on. And
thank you.
I just wanted to give you those compliments. That's
really you're very kind.
Thank you.
How are you, how are you holding up today? She hung up. That's all right. Thank you, Nicole. Let me go over to Tracy. We'll go to Tracy. Let's see. Goodbye, Nicole. Goodbye, Nicole. I'm trying to dump Nicole, and I can't. Let me do that. Let me do that. Oh, it's not dumping. 1-800-449-8686. Let's go here to Tracy. Hi, you're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hi, Phil. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Tracy. How you doing?
Fine. You know, I got to say that I really do love your show. You do make me laugh all the time.
Thank you.
You made a comment about how New Yorkers are feeling alone, and I just wanted to share with you that I work for a very, very large corporation. We must have about 18,000 employees, and we spent all day conference rooms dedicated with televisions. We had a tree planting. We had a speaker doing nothing but remembering all the lives that were lost and the lives that have been affected forever. And I just wanted to say to the people in New York that they're not alone. I'm calling from the other side of this continent. I'm from Monterey, California, and we did nothing but think of them all day long.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're not alone. And I think that most of the world feels the same way I do, that New Yorkers, they're not alone. And I just wanted to tell you, you know, that they're not.
That's good, and that's good to reach out like that, and really, as best you can, if you can't get to New York, and I'm sure you feel it. I mean, a lot of people feel it organically, you know.
But, yeah, and you know, we have offices in New York, and we have offices all over this world, on every part of the map you can imagine. And you know, we had the same ceremonies held in every part of every region in all of our offices. So.
Right.
You know, we feel for them, and our hearts go out to them, and I appreciate everything you do.
Well, you're kind, and I haven't done anything other than do a radio show, but it's good.
Yeah, but you bring laughter.
Well,
you bring laughter into life.
You're very kind. I think that what's happening in New York City is something very natural, Tracy. And that is, you can talk to, I don't think you can talk to anybody in New York without talking to somebody who lost someone here or knows someone who lost somebody here.
Yes.
And when we were first here in October of last year, and thanks a lot, Tracy, for your call. When we were in New York last year, I was with Peter Trippi and his wife, Connie, and as we looked at the pictures of the firefighters along the fence line at Ground Zero, he said, I swear, Peter's there saying, that's a cousin, that's a third cousin, that's a guy I went to school with, here's a guy that I used to work with. I mean, that's the community that New York has and how close this city truly is. I don't mean to say that Americans don't want to feel the very best about their country. I think that there is fear in our country that keeps people from getting really close to anger about this and really close to a sense that this represents, whether you want to believe this or not, what happened last year represents a concerted effort by individuals to destroy this country. Now, maybe that means something to some, maybe it doesn't mean as much to others, maybe people think I'm engaging in some hyperbole, flight of hysteria. I don't think so. This is simply the beginning of a concerted effort to destroy America. Now, why? Well, is it, as Norman Mailer wrote, because we're a failing country and we've made so many mistakes, we deserve it somehow. We should sit and suck our thumb in a corner and say, mea culpa, hit ourselves with a knotted rope and not do anything about it because, by God, we deserve it. Should we, as some people suggested, and I saw them on TV today, after what happened, after the horror of what happened in New York and Washington, should we have sat down and very cool, calm, and calculated, sit down with the United Nations and take a moment and breathe a deep breath and figure out how we're going to plot out our next step and be very methodical about it? In the meantime, what's lost is sometimes the very best instinct is a first instinct, which is we got to go find the guy that did this. We got to go put a bullet in a mad dog that would do something like this. Well, thank God the first instinct we had was acted on. We disassembled a corrupt regime that got its kicks beating women up, keeping children out of school, throwing burlap sacks over women, chopping off hands, putting bullets through people's heads in soccer stadiums. We completely dismantled a corrupt regime which aided, abetted, funded, gave solace to an organization of psychopaths, absolute, utter, sociopathic individuals whose mother took them off the nipple too soon. They didn't get enough love. They didn't get into Studio 54. They can't be American, and Islam is the only way. And they, like so many people do with religion, and we've got enough experience with this in our own country when it comes to Christianity, they take a religion, they pervert it to beyond all recognition and use it to their despicable ends. And what kind of a world do they want to create? Let me ask you that question. When we ruin America finally, when America's finally destroyed by these individuals, what new world do they think they're going to have? A world of glorious Islam? A world of glorious, of real freedom, where people are really happy? Because people in America are just not happy enough, and all of the horrific crimes that we've committed, all of the butchery and all of the terror that we have perpetrated around the world, as they see it, is reason enough to completely destroy this country. That is, without a doubt, nothing more than propaganda. It is a fabrication and an utter lie. The United States of America, in its efforts around this world since the beginning of this nation, while we have behaved nefariously as a country, perhaps as a government, perhaps in business, we have always, always laid our cards on the table, bared our souls to the world, opened up our wounds, opened up our guts, and shown our hearts, had Watergate committees. And we've had commissions investigating corrupt police. And we've had commissions investigating corrupt media. And we've had commissions investigating the military-industrial complex. And we have beat our breasts and we have wrung our hands over every mistake that we've ever made. And if a missile goes off course and destroys a village or kills some people, what do? We put the people responsible on trial. We put the facts out on the table. If we have a Mealy massacre, we take a William Calley and we put him in prison. We make mistakes, by God, but America inexorably and with many times against all odds and without a friend in the world, we try to move forward, we try to be better, we try to make it better. We don't keep wallowing in our own mistakes, and we certainly don't sit there and say, well, we really don't have any mistakes. You people are creating it for us. Iraq is creating the problem for us, and Saudi Arabia is creating the problem for us. We have enough free-thinking people in this country who will say, this is a mistake. We have to own up to that mistake. And sometimes you don't always have to agree with them. I don't agree with Mr. Mailer when he says we're a failing nation. I think that is the carping and the complaining of an old man who realizes he's coming to the end of his life, and so that must mean the end of the world is at hand. I don't agree with a Johnny Carson who suddenly opens up his big fat trap back in January and says all this patriotism is overboard. Really? Is that right? It's overboard. What should we have done, Johnny? Made the flag smaller? Maybe not been as patriotic? Maybe not been as angry? Maybe feel guilty that we're angry? Feel guilty that we feel such rage that we want to rip the throat out of the next guy that we see who even thinks about hijacking a plane or doing anything to our citizens? Would you like us to do that? Just exactly what are these people saying? What are they talking about? Well, they're not talking about anything. They feel guilty that they don't have any original ideas. They feel bad that they can't conjure up anything, that any good feeling for their country at all, because that just isn't cool. They feel bad that they can't conjure up a good, decent sense of real spiritual patriotism. I'm talking about spiritual patriotism. That doesn't mean God or Jesus. I'm talking about from the spirit. I'm talking about soul, in the sensibility of soul. I'm not talking about flag waving. Do they feel bad that they can't come up with that, that they can't create that, that they're too far past that, that they're too far gone in their lives? Well, guess what? If 9/11 created anything, if anything was born on 9/11, it was a sense that being an American is being a part of a new generation of human beings. We are the new men and the new women of this world. This generation, especially the young generation, represents the new men and the new women of a world that is crying and bleeding and pleading to stay in the past. The world wants to just stay still, stay put. They don't want us to move forward. Well, that's what we've always done as a country. We move forward. We are the future. And the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein and every guy over there that is a sheikh and a monarch and a king and a priest who doesn't trust his own people to create their own destiny and their own reality, all of those people are a part of the past. You want to know why they hate us? It's because we move people into the future. Because our ideas really are good ideas. Because our country is a great country and is the best that the world has ever seen. And that, baby, is the facts. That's the fact, Jack. All right, 1-800-449-8686. Back to some phone calls. We're live in New York City. We are live at Ground Zero. This is the Phil Henry Show.
One 800 449 8686. The Phil Henry Show is back.
We're live in New York City, and we are here on the anniversary of the terrorist attacks in Washington and New York, 9/11/02. Now, at around 11 after the hour, Pacific, and 11 after the hour. I hope I put this properly. At 9/11, because we are tape delayed in some locations, and we are live in others. So at 9/11 New York time, 6/11 Pacific time, we are going to observe about 10 seconds of silence, and that is also what is going to be happening at the Major League Baseball stadiums around the country. Now, we're only going to do about 10 seconds, and so you know the station's carrying us. We're doing 10 seconds so you don't have any off-air alarms going off, and maybe you can prepare for that, but we will observe 10 seconds of silence at 9/11. 1-800-449-8686. Here is Joey on the Phil Henry Show. Hello.
What's up, Phil?
How are you?
All right, big guy. I'm sitting here in Florida in the rain, waiting to meet an Arab actually for business. I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller. I have a bodyguard service that I provide. And I just want to give a shout-out to all my friends in New York that are former cops that were killed in the line of duty and a couple of firemen. I lost four buddies. But I hope that all Americans don't realize that not all people from the Middle East are bad. I hope we don't fall into the trap of their hatred and, you know, put people down because of their religion or their race. Because if we do that, we make ourselves as bad as the Bin Ladens of the world. You know, we don't
agree.
Forget in the world. I'm sorry,
yeah,
go ahead.
I agree with you, Joey. I agree with you.
Don't forget, in the world, if you listen to the names announced today during the readings of the names, there was a lot of Muslims lost, a lot of people from different countries in the Middle East. And we do business with Middle East every day. You know, I lived in Saudi Arabia for 2 years. I'm a licensed professional bodyguard. I'm actually getting ready to meet a priest here at the Galleria Mall in Sunrise in Fort Lauderdale. But we shouldn't. All I'm saying to Americans is, hey, I'm an ex-Marine, ex-law enforcement, from New York, from Queens, Forest Hills. All I say to Americans is don't fall into the trap and hate everybody because of their religion or they wear a turban on their head or they have a beard. Because guess what? It could have been another city, another state. It could have been another country. Well, we have the same mentality? No. So we got to remember, we're not built that way. We're built more stronger than that. We got to be strong. We got to survive. We'll get through it.
That's cool. And I fell into that trap for a long time. And through my characters on my show, I expressed this sort of this kind of prejudice, you know, against them. And I fell into the trap after 9/11. I'd see somebody going down the street with one of those things on their head, and I remember at the airport I saw a woman. She took it off because she didn't want to be seen with it on. And when she flashed her passport at the security gate, her passport photo showed her with the traditional Arab dress.
Well,
and I got angry, man.
I've been listening to you for a long time, whenever I can, you know, and I got to tell you, I'm meeting a gentleman actually now from the Middle East. It's kind of sad. His children haven't been able to go to school for 2 weeks, and I provide a bodyguard service for men, women, and children whenever I have to, wherever in the world. And I don't think we should, as Americans, fall into the trap of the hatred and the racism and the bias, because if we do, we're no better than the rest of the people in the world. What we need to do is take a stand up, but let's do it the right way. Let's do it the accountability way. And
but
if we're going to hold...
Go ahead.
And being an ex-Marine, if we're going to hold anybody accountable, I got to tell you, I lost four friends in the World Trade Center. But if I ever lost any family members, the first place I'd be suing, rather than suing the Middle Eastern people like everybody else is jumping on a bandwagon to sue Saudi and this and that, I'd say, look at our American government. What were they doing? Sleeping at the wheel? We're supposed to have the best intelligence in the world, and we allow this to happen. And I say that because I'm an ex-Marine. I've been there. I've seen how we operate. And I want to know, what were we doing, sleeping the day this happened?
Well, I don't agree with you. Were we sleeping? No, but we were ineffective, and we didn't have the knowledge that we have now.
Somebody did this, Joy.
You know, the guys that pulled the trigger on this were not Americans. They were Al-Qaeda. They were terrorists.
Right. No, you're right.
And those guys deserve a bullet. Now, is America supposed to learn from this? You bet, man. Do we have to get better at what we do? You better believe we have to get better at what we do. Do we have to? But you know what? There are limits to that, too. There are limits to how much we can do. As a matter of fact, when we come back from the break, I'm going to say something not against one of the family members that I heard today. I'm not going to say anything against her. But I want to disagree respectfully with what I heard one of the family members of the victims say today. Here at Ground Zero. This is the Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686, live from New York City.
And now more on The Phil Hendry Show.
We're in New York City at Ground Zero. You can hear behind me the whatever noises are coming from Ground Zero right now, and I can hear conversation. And these are workmen. They are disassembling now the scaffolding and some of the stages and ramps that were there in Ground Zero today. Also, occasionally we catch some audio from Battery Park and some of the music that they have been performing at a variety of parks in New York. President Bush is supposed to speak this evening from the Waldorf Astoria, that according to one of the news agencies, around 9 o'clock Eastern. And he was supposed to go to Ellis Island. And I'm just going to speculate. I don't know why he's not at Ellis Island, but I'm thinking perhaps it's because the weather, the wind has been so rough that you don't want to take Maybe you don't want to take a boat over the Hudson. And I'm from L.A., so...
Let's see. To the right is the East River? I forget.
Anyway, the Hudson, or you don't want to... Certainly don't want to chopper him anywhere. I think he drove down from Midtown. 1-800-449-8686. I said that I wanted to just comment about the security situation and the anger that some people feel over the security, the lapse of security in this country, especially as it pertained to the hijacked planes. There is nothing on 9/11 that happened that could have been prevented by the security that we had in place. But let me put it another way. We didn't want them to bring guns on the plane. They didn't bring guns on the plane. We had security in place to keep them from putting bombs on the plane. They didn't put bombs on the plane. We had security in place to keep individuals being able to hijack a plane and then take it off from another airport. All of the security that we learned through the past 30-plus years of hijackings, we had in place. These guys hijacked those planes with the most formidable weapon they had. I'm gonna back off some of that audio from Ground Zero because there's just a lot of conversation. The most formidable weapon that the individuals who hijacked those planes on 9/11 had was, to use the old term, they had a lot of chutzpah. They had the absolute audacity to cower a plane full of people. How did they do it? They came on with razor blades, box cutters. They immediately, you're not going to hold 40, 50, 60, 70 people hostage with a box cutter, but what you can do is you can kill one of them, the pilot, a flight attendant, which is what they did, and that would put the fear of God into the rest of the passengers. And that's exactly what happened. What they had in order to hijack those planes, you can't secure yourself against with $1 billion, $1 trillion worth of security. There is no way of putting a man through a detector to find out how much absolute criminal audacity he has to pull off something so bold he's going to strike fear and terror into the hearts of all of those passengers. To be angry at United Airlines, to be angry at American Airlines, to be angry at the security that was in place at our airports that day, yeah, you can say a lot of these people are not doing their jobs at those security stations. They're not looking through the bags. They're not detecting things. But keep in mind, they didn't bring a gun on those planes. They didn't bring a machine gun on those planes. They didn't bring a power drill on those planes. They didn't bring a bomb on those planes. They brought a lot of criminal audacity coupled with a box cutter and the willingness to commit homicide on the first person they saw and the absolute audacity and chutzpah to cower all those people in that plane. What got those planes hijacked was the audacity, the unbelievable, surreal audacity of those people. You want to get angry? I understand. You want to blame America? I understand. We've fallen down many times as a country, and our government, God knows, has let us down many times, but we've always battled back because we've demanded the truth. I'm telling you right now, there is no truth you're going to get out of Washington on this thing other than the acknowledgement we need better security. But at that particular time, learning from the experience that we had, hijackers bringing automatic weapons onto a plane or getting bombs onto a plane, we had secured those aircraft and other aircraft like that against that. You want to get angry? Get angry at the right people, man. What are we afraid of? You don't want to get angry at Osama, huh? You don't want to get angry at the terrorists in the Middle East because somehow we feel guilty that they live worse than we do. We don't want to get angry at maybe the Middle Eastern leaders because we think some of that will filter down to the people, and because we're ultimately pretty fair people in this country, we don't want to put it on the backs of the Iraqi people, the Palestinian people, or the people of Afghanistan. We're pissed at the guys that pulled this job. Saddam Hussein, those scumbags in Syria, whoever those lightweights were in the Taliban, boy, those guys were a whole big, tall, cool glass of nothing. That Mullah Omar, boy, what, he's a real formidable guy with a one eyeball, and he's hanging out in a cave wondering, well, what do we do next, Ben? And Ben doesn't know. He's laying on a freaking cot waiting for the dialysis machine to arrive from his friends in Saudi Arabia. They don't know what they're doing. They're a bunch of stumble bums yes, they have a lot of, a great deal of dedication to their cause. What is their cause? Their cause is hate. Their cause is murder. Their cause is the destruction of an entity that, quite frankly, they feel has shown up their dreams of the great Muslim civilization that they lost some 80 years ago when the Ottoman Empire went on its ass, or, if you will, hundreds and hundreds of years ago when the great Moorish Empire finally was dissolved. Maybe that's what's making them angry. But whatever, all the security in the world that we were aware of at that time, we had in place. Let me tell you something else. You cannot Monday morning quarterback. You can't sit there now and say they should have had security in place for box cutters.
Oh, really?
Let me tell you something. If before 9/11 they were checking bags for knives and pen knives, the hue and the cry and the scream that would have gone up from the American people, your ears would bleed for weeks. This is another example of Big Brother. Okay, it's another example of Big Brother. I don't know. Do you want us to check for knives or don't you? I don't understand. There's too much security. There's not enough security. There's something down the middle. Why can't you be perfect? Why can't this government... Look, guys, this is a great country. This is the best thing that's ever happened to this world. We go down the crapper, the world goes down a crapper. You think I'm kidding? I'm not. But we're not perfect, and we don't have all the answers, and sometimes the government isn't trying to screw you. They're just making mistakes. We made a bunch of mistakes. We paid for those mistakes dearly. Dearly. Yeah, we knew that there was a terror threat. We knew that we'd busted that guy up near the Canadian border before Y2K. He had a trunk full of explosives. We knew Al-Qaeda had made it clear. President Clinton had made it clear. The FBI had come public and said, America will be the new battleground of terrorism in the 21st century. It is not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. All of this information, folks, was in our laps as American citizens. It was there. It was there. Did we have time for it? Were we reading about it in the paper? Were we too busy going to our workout or waiting for the next club opening on South Beach? I don't know. I'll tell you what, right now we are. We're never going to make the mistake again as a people to just sort of poo-poo or dismiss the latest news release from Washington that says this, that, or something else about the security of America. We know how vulnerable we are now. We know how vulnerable we are now, but the other thing we got to get is this thing that some people just don't want to get. We're in a war. President Bush said it. You don't have to take his word for it. It's a war. It's a war. What's the enemy, Phil? The enemy is the combined terrorist apparatus of an Islamist philosophy that wants to destroy the United States. They want to do it by interrupting our computer and intelligence and information system and apparatus. They want to do it by interrupting our security in terms of police and fire. They want to do it by messing with our nuclear reactors. They want to do it by messing with our water supply. And they want to do it primarily through the instrument of terror, which means all you got to do is blow up one building. All you have to do is hijack one plane. And all you have to do really is maybe poison one water supply system that doesn't really even kill that many people, to strike fear and terror into the hearts of the people that you are trying to bring down. That's what the whole meaning of terrorism is. It doesn't mean that you have to kill 280 million people. It means you got them thinking about it. You got them thinking about it, and you got them arguing with each other about it, and you got them pointing fingers at each other about it, and pretty soon you got a mob scene over there, and they're ripe for the taking. That's the thinking, and it's not far-fetched. It is the thinking of terrorists, good, tried-and-true terrorists, the world over. Anybody remember the Twilight Zone called The Monsters Have Arrived on Maple Street? The aliens land, and they didn't even have to go down the street and take over the houses. All they had to do was turn the electricity off on one block, keep the electricity on in another block. Then all they had to do is not make the car start on one block, and make the cars start on another block. And the next thing you know, the people on each block are pointing fingers at each other saying, you're doing it. No, you're doing it. And by the way, why do you stare at the stars at night? Are you looking for creatures from outer space? The guy says, I just like stars. Oh, really? And how come you're in your basement on a ham radio? I like it. It's a hobby of mine. No, maybe you're communicating with the aliens. And the next thing you know, everybody is at each other, is at each other's throats. And we got to cool that out. That's what we used to do. Because we don't seem to have the moral fiber to say, Al-Qaeda, Syria, Baghdad, there's a part of the world that resents the success that we've had as a nation. There's a part of the world that resents the fact that they haven't been able to make their culture work. And there's a part of the world, unfortunately, the people are being manipulated with propaganda by their leaders who believe that we're against the Palestinian people. Now, what do you do when your government is corrupt and all you know how to do is steal from your own people, starve your own people, and generally do nothing to provide for them? What do you do when they start noticing that and getting upset about it? You make somebody else the enemy. You say, well, it's not me, it's America. Look what America's doing. Well, what are they doing? Well, look what they're doing to the Palestinians. Yes, that's it, the Palestinians. Look what they're doing to them. And the next thing you know, you have hungry, starving, angry people who are not legally allowed to protest their own government. They've got a legal enemy now. They got the United States of America. And they're in the streets and they're burning the American flag. And by God, if America would just get out of the Arabian Peninsula, everything would be far out, man. We get out of the Arabian Peninsula, and let me tell you what, that whole place becomes a shooting gallery again. And they don't really want us out of the Arabian Peninsula. They want maybe our troops out, but they want those oil tankers coming up and parking every day. They want them tankers parking every day, baby. They want maybe the troops out, but they like that greenback. They want the money. Read between the lines, guys, and stop with this. It's the government that did it to us, and it's the airlines that did it to us. And just call a spade, open up your window like Howard Beale said, and shout, I'm tired of this crap, I'm not going to take it anymore. It's the Al-Qaeda, it's the Saddam Husseins. There are entities out there that want to murder your country. Now, that may seem unhip and uncool and very simple-minded. That's the fact, Jack. That's what's going on. And I'm looking across the street at the end result of that. I'm looking at a place where there used to be some 50,000 people going to work every morning. Today, all I see is a hole. That tragedy, that murder was committed by Middle Eastern Islamists. It wasn't the Jews. It wasn't America. It wasn't some fairy tale. We landed on the moon. And the terrorists took down the World Trade Center, okay? 1-800-449-8686. We'll get back to some phone calls from you guys. We're live in New York City. This is the Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Live in New York City, the Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. We're in honor of 9/11 doing a radio show tonight that's decidedly different from the one that we usually do, which is a comedy show, if you will. And tonight, in honor of our country and because I feel like it, because I feel strongly, we're doing a radio show that is an observance. It's a comment on what happened to our country. And you can join us. And as I said at the beginning of the show, I got no question to ask you. I don't have any topic for you to call in on. If you have any, if you have feelings about the things that I'm saying or the things that you saw, you're invited to call us. Here is Liz on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello, Liz.
Hi, Phil. Hey, you know what? I'm doing great, thanks. You know, out here in Santa Cruz, I hear you loud and clear.
Cool. Cool.
And so I just want to say good job, and it was worth the wait just getting to tell you that. And you know, last week I did fly out of state for the first time since 9/11, and I actually was one of the chosen few to be frisked or gone over. And you know
what? That's always fun, yeah.
Well, you know, hey, they made me take my shoes off, big deal. I lost a little small Swiss Army knife because I was silly enough to leave it in my backpack. So, you know what? So fine. I'd rather know that they got it off of me rather than me being somebody, a different person that would use it, you know?
Right. But, you know, right now we have to get to the airport 90 minutes before a flight. It used to, was it before all hell
broke
loose?
Probably an hour.
An hour. I mean, okay, so now it's down to 90 minutes, you know?
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I heard a guy on local radio in Los Angeles. Well, I've been inconvenienced, and what about the inconvenience? Will you shut up? Just stop it. You know, you're inconvenienced. You know, I get to the airport 90 minutes before I even have a chance to get a Starbucks. I'm on the plane, or they're boarding it. I mean, I don't know what people need. But thank you, Liz.
Well, Phil, let me tell you this real too. I believe that no plane will get hijacked if I'm on board again. I may not be a large, tall, strong woman, but somehow I'll build a team.
I mean, we've been saying it for a year. I pity the guy that tries to hijack a plane now. I pity the man that tries to hijack a plane now. There isn't an American, I don't know about anybody else, but I don't think there's one American who's going to believe the line, "Don't worry, we're just going to land it at JFK." I think that we all know what's coming, and I think they know that. I think that the Al-Qaeda or whoever these morons are know that that little magic trick out of their bag is done, man. They can't do that one anymore. What are they going to do? Unless they try to, you know. So forget about the airplane thing. Now they got to try something else.
Is this your first trip back to Ground Zero?
No. We were here last October about 6 weeks after it happened. And it was a pile of steaming rubble then. It was the steam was still coming up. You could smell charred wood. The workers were coming in and out covered in soot and ash. There was National Guard and New York City police standing around, and it was really a raw time emotionally. I remember walking up to these guys and hugging them, hugging cops, hugging National Guard, and it was a real raw time. So we're back now, and it's the, you know, the retrieval and the excavation, etc., is done, and now I guess it awaits to be seen. And that, by the way, that circle there in the middle of Ground Zero is called the Wreath. It's supposed to be a large wreath, and I called it, I think, the Circle of Honor. 1-800-449-8686. The feeling of being here for me is simply reconnecting to the most pivotal moment in the history of this country in my life, even more pivotal than the assassination of John Kennedy, and everybody in my generation remembers that. So coming back to this reconnects me to it, and I'm not going to forget. I don't know about anybody else. I know President Bush said he isn't going to forget. I know Craig is not going to forget, and that's unusual for him. 1-800-449-8686. We'll be right back on The Phil Hendry Show live in New York City.
This is The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
Live in New York City, The Phil Hendry Show. As we speak, the president is speaking, and he is on Ellis Island. We had some erroneous information that he might just speak from the Waldorf, and that is not the case. He's on Ellis Island. He's speaking. In about 5 minutes, 4.5 minutes, we're going to observe 10 minutes of silence if local stations don't hear anything. 10 seconds, not 10 minutes, although some people may actually prefer that. Phil's not going to talk for 10 minutes. All right, let's tune it in. Let's just listen to the sounds of trucks going by. We're going to observe 10 seconds of silence, and for the stations carrying the show, we don't want to freak you out. If you hear 10 seconds of silence at 91100, that's because we're observing silence in memoriam for those who died at the World Trade Center, certainly those who died at the Pentagon, and those individuals who perished on the hijacked aircraft, notably, of course, the brave individuals on Flight 93. And that is an event that took place today that was really moving. Out near Shanksville, Pennsylvania, where the president was also seen and presented a wreath, and there is a memorial there, I think a permanent memorial to the individuals on Flight 93. And that's a whole other story. That's like a book somebody's going to have to write someday. That's just... That's an amazing thing. Flight 93, I think about that a lot, because don't you think, if you guys were honest with yourselves, don't you think that in your life, you would like to have a moment where history sort of taps you on the shoulder and allows you to be a hero of that magnitude? And I know what the reality is. We're heroes every day when we put food into our kids' mouths. We're heroes every day when we can get out of bed in the morning. And that's true. But to rise up at a pivotal moment, at an incredibly pivotal moment in history, and take action with nothing more than your bare fists, and avert further disaster, which most probably was going to occur either at the Capitol building or the White House, that's something, to my way of thinking, that just moves me. And there is, or there are, some websites dedicated to a campaign to try to get the Presidential Medal of Freedom, and I've mentioned this before on the show, for the passengers on Flight 93. I don't know whether that's appropriate or not. I don't know what the criteria is for the Presidential Medal of Freedom, but I think it would behoove a lot of us to look into it. What took place that day, and I remember hearing the news, two planes have slammed into the World Trade Center towers. One plane has hit the Pentagon, and as the news was reported that day, we've just received word that a plane has crashed in western Pennsylvania. And I remember thinking, is that just a plane crash? Or is that a part of what happened? And I had this eerie, very eerie sense that was a part of what was going on. But why did it crash? What was that about? I didn't know. And as the story emerged, it became one for the ages. It just became one for the books. This act of heroism, knowing that you will not live. And I don't know who it was, but one of the passengers said to his wife, while they were speaking on the cell phone, the cell phone conversations we've heard so much about, he said, "We're not going to live through this, but we've got to do something." That is a moment in a person's life that I've not experienced, and I dare say perhaps most of us haven't, I don't know. But to say, "I'm going to die, I've got to do something," well, was it Ralph Waldo Emerson who said, and I just heard this on TV today, so don't think that I'm a guy who reads a lot of Emerson, heroism is when you act on instinct, not on thought, and that's what makes it right. 1-800, and I think I understand that. All right, 1-800-449-8686. We are coming up now on about 25 seconds to our 10-second period of silence in memory of the 3,000 who lost their lives on 9/11. We're coming up now on 15 seconds. I will let the stations know again. If you hear 10 seconds of silence, we are simply observing on 9/11, 9/11 p.m. local time, those who died on 9/11 in the year 2001. And we'll observe silence now. And as we did that, all across the country, at Major League ballparks, play stopped as the players and the fans alike observed silence for the people who passed on. I wanted to say something about Tony Blair. I don't want to bore you, but this needs to be said. I've been hearing a whole lot of talk about Tony Blair and the British and how they're nothing but sycophants and how they're nothing but a bunch of guys that are sucking America's kneecaps, and all he wants to be is George Bush's pet dog, and can't he think for himself? Let me ask you a question. I don't see anybody else stepping up to the plate, do you? If a guy wants to be a sycophant, don't you think he wants to be part of the crowd and not stand out like a sore thumb? Tony Blair has taken the lot of his nation. The British government and the British people have decided that they're going to stand shoulder to shoulder with our country. And when you hear people say, can't he think for himself? And why is he doing all of this talking? And what is he, just a parrot for Bush? This is a guy who's got the balls to say, we're not just extending our sympathy to the American people, which I've seen television ads for from Saudi Arabia and Qatar and all these other lip service paying countries. Well, we have great sympathy. Well, what does that exactly mean? Well, I really feel bad that your house burned down, Charlie. Better luck next time. Now let me go in and I got to eat breakfast, you know? What it means is this. It means that this is one country, Great Britain, that has said, guess what? Where you guys go, we'll follow. Whatever hell you got to go through, we'll go through with you. And whatever aid you need, we will provide it. And whatever bullets you got to eat, we'll eat. And whoever you got to grease, we're standing right there with you to do a lot of the killing, too. I don't think that's bad. I think that's absolutely moral. I think that's man, if ever there was a war that demanded it, probably for the first time since World War II, if you want to go back to that great, you know, greatest generation stuff, this is the war, baby. You want one that where it's clear cut? You want one that where it's black and white? You got it. And the British are the ones that have stepped up to the plate. Now, for people to say that Tony Blair and the British government, the British people, are simply trying to be a miniature America, let me ask you something. What are the solutions that the French are offering? What solutions have the Germans offered? Oh, go to the United Nations and what? Try to get a homeland for the Palestinians, and that way America will never be attacked again. If you believe that, Charlie, man, I have got, well, I got two twin towers I'd like to sell you. Yeah, sure, that's it. As soon as we get a homeland for the Palestinians, and I'm not saying that that is not a just cause. Yes, it is. But if you think for one second, if America throws in its lot with the Palestinians and says, all right, we are not backing up Israel, we're backing up the Palestinians, you think that's going to end the terror attacks against this country? Do you really honestly believe that that's what motivated Al-Qaeda? Al-Qaeda loves it when Palestinians die. Yasser Arafat loves it when Palestinians die. Saddam Hussein loves it when Palestinians die. Saddam Hussein loves it so much, he pays the relatives of the people that kill themselves with money. Go out, murder yourself, and we'll give your family money because I got to have something to do on a Saturday night, and I just love reading about you people blowing yourselves up. The Saudi royal family, they love it when Palestinians die. Not Israelis, Palestinians, because what that does is it buys them time. It buys a little more time for their phony baloney governments and their phony baloney agendas. It buys Saddam Hussein a little more time to buy American whiskey. It buys him a little more time to get Pierre Cardin suits. It buys him a little more time to get down to Blockbuster and watch his favorite American movies. It gives the Saudis a little more time to go down to another barbecue with George Bush. It gives them all a little, it gives their little corrupt regimes just a little bit more time to exist as long as Palestinians are dying, because then they can say, see what the Israelis are doing? Look at what the Americans are doing. Some people say, well, if the Saudi government isn't there, the one that rises up will be even more anti-American. Well, I'll tell you what. I'd rather know who my enemy is, you know. I'd rather have a good, honest enemy and know who to fight than some backstabbing, two-faced shake and these ads that they're running on TV about how much they feel for America. This is the guy who said he was going to give $10 million to the city of New York, but also said America brought this on itself. You know what Giuliani told him to do with his $10 million, don't you? He told him to park it right back up where he got it. He pulled it out of his ass, he can stick it back up there. And the same thing goes with all those sheikhs from Qatar and the rest of them. Don't make the mistake, and if there are any people listening to me of Palestinian origin living in the United States, I say this to you with the greatest of respect. Don't ever believe that Yasser Arafat is feeling bereaved when your people die. Don't ever think that Saddam Hussein is upset. They love it. Because as long as Palestinians die, they have a cause to rally their people around, and it keeps their people's minds off the real culprit and the real criminal, and those are the regimes that are running those countries in the Middle East. Those are the criminals. And if anybody had any real brains going on, especially those journalists so-called from the Middle East, I'll tell you, if there's ever been an oxymoron, it's Arab journalist. That's a hot one, man. Those guys are really digging for the truth, aren't they? And I see them on TV, they're giving airtime. Yeah, let's talk to so-and-so about what's going on. Well, you know, America did this, America did that. You ever going to hear them say, point blank, right out, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Syria, all of them, if they pooled their resources, they could actually build a society and a culture and a country for the Palestinian people. They could build a decent life for their own people. If they really pooled their resources and just said, screw off America and you too, Israel, and why don't we just concentrate on the problems of our own people, they could build a pretty good life for their own people. Do you ever hear an Arab journalist say that? No, because they don't have it in them. They don't have the professionalism. They don't have the ability. I don't even think they have the education. They certainly don't have the freedom. What you're hearing, by the way, is the ambient sound coming from Ground Zero, and there's a lone dog now barking into the night out there in New York off of FDR Parkway. Our number is 1-800-449-8686. I think President Bush has concluded his comments. And again, what we're saying to you tonight, I don't have any particular question. I have no particular topic for you. I'm saying if you're feeling something tonight and you want to say it, you can say it here. The number 1-800-449-8686. 888-449-8686. We're live in New York City. This is The Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
And then there was a story today. We're in New York, by the way, The Phil Hendry Show. Across from me is Ground Zero. It's lit up, and I imagine they're doing, they're disassembling, as they say, the platforms and the scaffolding they had for the memorial today. But it's lit, and it as it has been every single night since 9/11 of 2001. And then we have the story from today. Northwest Airlines had to divert a plane, I think, to Las Vegas because three men, allegedly of Middle Eastern descent, locked themselves in the bathroom. And did we get any word on Janice what they were doing in the bathroom to each other or with each other? Or were they just scared? Were they afraid of flying? We don't know anything about they locked themselves in the bathroom. So maybe that's a good thing. You guys don't like this? Okay, I don't like America. Great. Lock yourself in the bathroom. Stay there and we'll get to you. 1-800-449-8686 is the number here on The Phil Hendry Show. We'll go back to some calls, and I have Sylvia. Hello, Sylvia.
Hi, Phil. Nice to
How
talk to you. I've been
Thank
listening
you.
To you since 96. cool. I just wanted to agree with your stand on the Middle East about Israel, that the Arabs had the same opportunity as the Israelis to work the same type of land geographically, and that they didn't do anything with the land. Israel was just a tiny little piece of land that was just as bad off as the others. And they chose to work it and move the rocks and everything and make it agriculturally, you know, ready and cleared swamps out of it and everything and made it what it is today.
Right.
You know, and that's the difference between it and then the desert like, you know, wasteland that the Arabs are living on now, because they didn't, you know, have the, you know, whatever, the gumption to develop the land.
Well, they were misled by their own leaders. Their leaders
uh-huh.
told them, "Don't you worry, we'll kick the Zionists out, and it will all be yours." And so, rather than, and I want to tell you something. I heard this, and I couldn't believe my ears. Allegedly, no less a person than Muammar Gaddafi said the following thing. And recently, within the last few months, he said, "If you look at how the Jewish people have assimilated themselves into the American culture and have succeeded and have flourished, why can't the Palestinian people do the same thing and the Arab people do the same thing within the context of Israeli society?"
Right.
Because there are Arab Israelis,
right.
There are Palestinian Israelis.
Right.
And he said, frankly, there are more Arabs in that part of the world than there are Jews. Within a generation or two, it will be basically an Arab land anyway, Israel.
Right. Isn't
and I don't see anything wrong with any of those comments. Assimilate doesn't mean giving up your culture.
Mm-hmm.
It means working for yourself for a change, as opposed to letting some despot, allowing some despot to manipulate your feelings. And so rather than, as you just said so intelligently, Sylvia, rather than work that land and begin to create a homeland, which, by the way, after the initial war of 1948, the Arab and Palestinian people, the Arab states, accepted the partition. They wanted to accept the partition. But it was too late. They had gone to war with Israel. Israel had taken some of that land. But rather than say, let's start to create a Palestinian state, they were misled. They were lied to by their leaders. They said, we will go to war and we'll kick the Zionists into the Mediterranean. They've gone to war with them now, by my account, somewhere in the neighborhood of four times. Each time they've had their ass kicked and humiliated. The armies of the Arab nations have been absolutely humiliated in the face of the Israeli armed forces. You want to go mano a mano? You want to go toe-to-toe? You want to have yourself a little war? All right, boom. The Israelis kicked their ass in 48. They did it again in the Six-Day War. They did it in the Yom Kippur War. And so they turned to another tactic. They turned to terrorism. And that has been so effective that now the Palestinian people are living in squalor and have sunk so low as to arming their children with bombs and sending them in to kill themselves as suicide bombers along with Israelis. This is how degraded the life situation of the Palestinian people has become. It's a crying shame, and it is nobody's fault other than Arafat and all the other Palestinian leaders who led them down the bright red primrose lane of we'll kick the Zionist ass into the Mediterranean. Nasser and all the rest of those bankrupt, morally bankrupt and corrupt leaders who led them down that bright, rosy little path. Now, is that to say that Israel has not mistreated Palestinians? No, it is not. The Israeli armed forces, in an effort to control their borders, have probably committed many crimes. But let me ask you this. When the Israeli armed forces fire on and kill civilians, and they ensue a investigation into what went wrong, as I've heard them do over the last 6 months about five or six times, I don't see a complimenting action on the part of the Arabs when they hang a man from a lamppost who they accuse of being a collaborator without so much as a trial, when they murder a woman who they accuse of being a collaborator with a machine gun without so much as a trial. This is the degraded state that the Palestinian leaders have allowed their people to fall into. It's unbelievable. Now I'm getting the news from Janice that the Northwest Airlines flight that was diverted when it had three men of alleged Middle Eastern descent locked themselves in a bathroom. Apparently the men who locked themselves in the bathroom were shaving their beards and their bodies. All four are being questioned by the FBI. Now, I've heard of guys waxing, and I've never been in favor of that. I saw a guy in West Palm Beach do it once, and I said, no, I'm drawing the line at that, man. I've never had that much complaint about my back hair. Okay, but locking yourself in the can of a Northwest Airlines jet just before landing and saying, you know what, I'd really like the slick look when I land. I'm going to go ahead and shaving it all down. Just, you know, you're sitting there, you got a beard and a turban. Screw it, man. I think I'm going to go with that Fabio thing, and I'm just going to do, you know, I'm going to oil up. And you like 3 minutes before landing? Bad move, baby. And you can't even get three cats in there. Thank you, Sylvia, for your call. 1-800-449-8686. Boy, we're coming up on another break. This night is flying by. I wish we had, like, I could do three, four, five, six more hours on the air talking about the things that we feel and the things that we're seeing here in New York. And a lot of them have been so wonderful. My wife has taken the kids to see Mamma Mia and Hairspray. They've seen two plays. We had a fantastic BLT at the Carnegie Deli last night. We had a fantastic, what did I have at the Stage Deli? I can't remember. I had some enormous, like Reuben at the Stage Deli, and we have the food is great. The people of New York couldn't be better. It's a great city. It's a great country. It's not a bad radio show. Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686, live from New York City.
...1-800-449-8686. And now more on The Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show live in New York City tonight. A few more minutes on the air with you. You are hearing in the background the sounds of trucks moving in and out of the Ground Zero area. You're hearing the sounds, in some instances, of police sirens and just regular vehicle traffic on the FDR Parkway. I think that's the FDR Parkway. Forgive me if I don't know what I'm talking about. You can hear the workers disassembling. This is what's going on right now at Ground Zero here in New York City, downtown New York. At the beginning of the show, I mentioned that there was some justifiable feeling on the part of people in Washington, D.C. that the attack on the Pentagon had been sort of superseded. It had been a little bit preempted by all of the events and the tragedy that struck New York. And you know what? They're right. I think that the people in Washington obviously deserve all of our, every ounce of empathy that we would put forth for the people in New York should also be extended to those in Washington. But I also said, I think it's not because we don't care for them, it's that they're military, and military people seem to be so self-contained and self-possessed that they don't look like they need much help, you know? They don't look like they need a lot of emotional help. But let me just say this, having heard those words today, I'm going to change my thinking on that and realize that no matter how tough the person looks on the outside, obviously, it's the person suffering on the inside that's the most important. Now, all of that is to say this. CBS News created a timeline on its website called America's Darkest Morning, and it it is a chronological, if you will, listing of all of the events on 9/11/01, when the planes hit the World Trade Center, when the World Trade Center towers collapsed, etc. Well, guess what they omitted? At no place on this timeline is there a mention of the plane that slammed into the Pentagon. It simply says, CBS News, America's Darkest Morning. They have the American Airlines jetliner Flight 11 hitting the tower. They have 175 hitting the World Trade Center. 9:40, the president calls for a full-scale investigation. The towers collapse. The fourth hijacked airliner, Flight United 93 from Newark, crashes in western Pennsylvania. No mention of the attack on the Pentagon. So we've got to remember what happened. There were some 186 people, 189 people, I think, that died in the Pentagon that day. And a good deal of time was spent today remembering them. President Bush was there in Washington, and then on to Pennsylvania, and here in New York he came. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show. Here is Michelle on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello, Michelle.
Hi.
How are you?
Doing okay, and you?
Cool. Yeah, I'm all right.
I just wanted to let everybody in New York know that I feel everything there is to feel for them, and we love all of y'all, and we hope y'all can, you know, work everything out. And
we got to work everything out, Michelle. The whole country's got to work it out.
I understand,
you know?
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, and my son is now one was in the neonatal unit the day this happened, and it just makes me, you know, more family stronger. You know, knowing, you know, that something like this ain't gonna keep me from being the best parent that I can be.
Neonatal, is that a medical unit?
Yes, it's like intensive care.
Was he premature? What was wrong?
Yes, he was 2 months premature.
Wow, cool. Is he cool now?
Yes, he is fine and everything. And
good.
I was just wanting to let everybody know that I feel completely for him. I've been on the verge of tears all day.
I thank you for that, Michelle. I'll let him know. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Here is Joe on the Phil Hendry Show. Joe?
Hi, Phil. I'm 25 years old, and I felt compelled to call to tell you how I feel and what I'm thinking of. I have always in the past had somewhat of a shallow respect and understanding of how precious life is, period, but how precious life is here in America. It's been in the back of my head. And I think that now after 9/11 and the year that has passed, my generation, I know I certainly feel, has a stronger connection and a stronger understanding and appreciation down to the bone marrow of our bodies for what we have here and how precious it is and how we have to protect it. That when I go to a bookstore and read someone's opinion that in another country would be banned or censored, that I can listen to you, that I can go to the coffee shop in the morning, not everybody has this, and our government and our way of life is not perfect, but it's a strong one and one we have to protect. And if anything can be said that any good came from 9/11, it's that my generation and other generations that did not have that respect and understanding at first, now they have it. I hope they do.
Because I think you guys, I don't want to call you guys Gen X. Gen X guys are all in their 30s now.
Right.
But your generation is the stronger from this standpoint.
Exactly.
All of the complaining that I've heard about, do we have to hear all this 9/11 stuff, has been coming from people in their 40s and 50s.
Right.
People who, you know, seem been kind of going along for a big portion of their lives, thinking that if you complain loud enough, the government will come up with some kind of a solution to the problem. So the people that I see, the real patriots that I see, generally come from their 20s and 30s.
Right, and it's not superficial. And it's not to say that the folks who ran out to buy flags to put on their cars and what have you were being superficial, but it, you know, it's true, you know, and it's pure, and it comes from the soul now. And I'm, like I said, there's nothing good about what happened on September 11th, 2001. But the fact remains, it's stirred something in our souls now that we have to keep on and hold on to continue to fight for. And Phil, I don't know what religion you are, but God bless you and God bless us all, man. That's
all right,
real,
thank
how
you.
I really I, feel, man.
Thank
God,
you.
And I love New York, and I love humanity. I love the United States of America. We are going to stand united forever.
It ain't a bad place to live.
No, it's not, man. I can't think of anywhere else I'd want to live. Except
Word.
Maybe California, because I'm in Florida, and we're not too hot over here.
Florida ain't too bad, man. I was in Miami 3 years. I dug it.
Yeah,
thanks so
number.
Much, Joe.
Thank you,
you very much,
bye-bye.
Man. Thanks. Bye-bye. All right. Well, then we don't need to take any more calls, because that was perfect. That was a perfect phone call. That was a perfect phone call, because that's how I feel. And if it's too corny for some people, hey, you know what? Go rent a movie. But that's it. And I see when I drove home a week after 9/11 last year, and I saw kids up on the freeway overpasses waving flags, and I got to my son's football game. I saw the kids. They were waving flags, and everybody was like, with their jaws open. Wow! I mean, this is a generation. It's a non-cynical generation to a degree about the country, as opposed to say my generation, which came up through Vietnam, through the credibility gap of Lyndon Johnson and Watergate, and all of the stories that you've heard your baby boomer parents tell ad nauseum. And luxuriating in the sense that this country affords us such individualism that we forget that we're a part of a country, like I said at the beginning of the program. Well, we got to get reminded of that, you know? And if you don't have enough time maybe to pay attention to a newspaper, or if you don't have enough time to pay attention to what even your local government's doing or your state government's doing, guess what? Make some. Make some time. Well, I don't have any. Well, that's too bad. You're going to have to start to make a little. Have to start to pay a little bit of attention. Pay a little bit of attention to this place. This place, this country, sometimes gets along just through momentum. It's almost as if, like a good friend that you haven't talked to in a long time, they just sort of sit there at the end of the phone waiting for you to call. That's America. That's our country. We are a part of a community. We are not just getting up in the morning and going to our jobs and coming home and waiting to get enough money to lease the BMW to try to get the new job. That's great, man. I mean, more power to you. Let's do it. But we got to remember that there is a larger community out there that we are responsible for. Yes, we are. We are responsible for our country. That's not liberal. That's not socialist. That's patriotism in its purest, most spiritual form. You are responsible for this place. Take a look around you. I dare you, take a look around you and find anybody else that's doing it better. Take another country that is more honest about themselves than America. I'm not saying take a country that hasn't made as many mistakes. I mean, I'm sure that there are nations that hold back and don't get involved and sort of just hang back and probably haven't been involved in as many blunders, international or domestic. But America, because we are, well, let's take the French, for instance. They like to hold back, and we always love to kick them around, so why not? But seriously, you know, when you take a chance in this world, let's use that old, tired cliche, but I love it anyway. Ted Williams, the guy's one of the greatest hitters in the history of baseball. Guess how many times he struck out? A whole hell of a lot. When you step up to the plate and you take your cuts, baby, you're going to strike out a lot. That's America. We've struck out a few times. We've made a lot of mistakes. And by God, doesn't the rest of the world just... can't they just wait to remind us of it? Well, you know, you brought this upon yourselves. Okay. Well, we brought it upon ourselves. Well, allow us to solve the problem. Charlie, bust out the missiles. Oh, wait a minute. You can't solve the problem. Don't tell us how we're going to solve the problem. President Bush is going to make a speech tomorrow to the United Nations. I suggest every one of you watch it. I'm anticipating, and I could be wrong, I'm anticipating it'll be a humdinger, baby. I think it's going to be sweet. The President of the United States, Bush, is going to address the UN. Or as Ronald Reagan once called it, a nest of spies. In any event, which I don't personally believe, I think it's going to be a real rock and roll time myself. I think I'm going to sit back with some party mix and, maybe roll a couple of spliffs and have a real good time watching that one, because I got a feeling he's going to put a boot to somebody's ass over there. Do you want to live in a world with civilization, or don't you? Do you want to live in a world where a world of law, or don't you? Huh? Do you want to start making excuses for these psychopathic scum that have no more respect for Islam or any other religion than a man on a freaking moon? Well, you know what? You're going to have to step up to the plate. So far, I've seen one country do it, Great Britain. And what Tony Blair has gotten for that is a whole lot of abuse. They've stepped up to the plate. I don't see anybody else doing it. I see everybody else running for cover, covering their heads, running under the table, and kind of waiting for the fireworks to end. By the way, we got news on that Northwest Airlines plane. Sources tell Associated Press that pilots were alarmed because the shaving, these three men went into the can and locked themselves in there and started shaving all their body hair. Well, the pilot got alarmed because the shaving was in line with information in a safety advisory that warned that shaving could be a part of a ritual that precedes self-sacrifice. Now, that's heavy, you know. In other words, I'm sure tomorrow there's going to be people going, hey, nice going, Charlie. Those guys, were they shaving their rear ends, too? What were they doing? Nice going. I mean, they were shaving their bodies, so you decided to scramble jets? Hey, better safe than sorry, whatever. That'll teach you guys to be shaving your body hair on an airplane. Frankly, I'm glad the pilot did that. I do not want to go in and use the can after some guy's been in there shaving his ass. If you don't mind. Especially an Arab. No, I'm kidding. You know, anybody. I'm trying to be egalitarian here through my anger. 1-800-449-8686. The last few minutes here on the Phil Hendry Show, we've been talking to people saying, if you feel something, call. But I'm not giving anybody an agenda, and I'm not giving anybody a topic tonight. I'm talking about how I feel. You're invited to do the same. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show. We're in New York City.
The Phil Hendry Show is back.
We're live in New York. We sit across the street from the Ground Zero, where the World Trade Center once stood. The Ground Zero area, what has become known as the hole by the assembled press here, not disrespectfully, but just in journalistic shorthand, is lit up by a number of Klieg lights. The area there is right now the site of the retrieval of whatever equipment they needed for today's events. Sitting just outside on a side street, just outside Ground Zero, are the, I can see the illuminated taillights of trucks, workmen loading things in and out. I see what could be the illuminated taillights of some town cars. Perhaps there's still some people there. As you know, if you watch television today, there at the center of Ground Zero is something they call the wreath. The wreath is where the families assembled today, laid a picture, laid flowers, said a prayer, remembered a loved one, remembered a colleague, remembered a friend. And that circle that you saw, you know what, I'm getting ahead of myself, but that circle that you see called the wreath is going to be illuminated and protected until it becomes a permanent part of the memorial that will be standing at Ground Zero. In Battery Park, they have lit the Eternal Flame, and the Eternal Flame is contained in a rock circle, and that rock circle was drawn from the fountain. It was retrieved from the wreckage, the ruins of the World Trade Center. It was a part of a fountain that was at the World Trade Center. That was transported over to Battery Park. In the middle of that rock circle will be illuminated the Eternal Flame, which was lit this evening, and it will remain lit forevermore. I'm listening to, those are just sounds from Ground Zero that you're hearing. Today, we heard the names of over 2,000 people read out loud by a number of individuals there at Ground Zero, and not one of those people did I recognize, and I, except maybe one or two, and I was really grateful for that. I was really grateful to see just regular people, you know. I mean, I'm not putting down celebrities, but for the first time in I don't know how long, a major event, a major memorial was held in this country without movie stars or some television celebrity being a part of it, you know. And just to see, like, regular folks getting up there and reading the names, a couple of them I guess I recognize. Maybe some were politicians, but by and large, they were individuals that I didn't know. Were they family members? Were they the friends? Were they local business people? I don't know. And that's fine. I respect them, whoever they are, for just being who they were. Over 2,000 names were read. It took over 3 hours. We saw the families. I was, as I said earlier, no more than 3-4 feet from them as they assembled. I could see tears. I could see a look of stunned amazement on their faces. I could see, I could see some wandering. Perhaps this is, for some of them, their very first trip to New York. I don't know. But they went down. They said their prayers. They laid their flowers. The president was here and took a long time signing autographs and meeting people. And that was really cool. He was shaking a lot of hands. I mean, the guy stayed there for as long as it took. And to my way of thinking, everything that happened today, we can now say that, if you'll forgive the phrase, we can now say we can put this site, this place, these hallowed areas, this hallowed ground, we can now let it rest in peace. And I think tonight, for the first time, we can say that the people that perished there a year ago are now at peace. Maybe they're just at peace in our own minds. I'm sure in their way they've been at peace for over a year. But in our minds we can now feel that this is a peaceful place, that this place has been sanctified, if you will, and now it's ready for its rebuilding. And that was the coolest thing, I think, that probably happened today for me, and maybe for you guys too. This is the Phil Hendry Show. Thanks for joining us from New York. All of this week, we'll be back tomorrow night. We'll be back Friday night. We're coming home on Saturday. We're in New York City. This is the Phil Hendry Show.